In all his decades of publishing history, one event has affected Superman more than any other. Worlds lived, worlds died, and that was only the beginning. Superman was never the same. Presenting Superman in Crisis. Episode 57, The Wolf of Clinton Street. Dateline, May 8th, 1986. Hello and welcome back to Superman in Crisis, a podcast by John Wilson, that's me, chronicling the twilight adventures of the Man of Steel in his pre-Crisis incarnation. We are looking at every issue of Crisis on Infinite Earths and all of the Superman adventures that were published alongside them. Or rather, we did look at all of those, and now we're continuing on with the Superman stories going up to the end of his history next month. In June of 1986. But today we're talking about the Superman adventures that were published on May 8th, 1986, and that one adventure is going to be Superman 422. The cover is given to us by Brian Bolland, and it is black and white with hints of red, and it is a startling masterpiece of horror. And by horror, I mean just like monstrousness. Superman is on the cover in black and white, and his face still has the hair and the spit curl on it, but it has been transformed into something. In the story, they're werewolves. It does not look super wolfish to me. It looks more like what some of the more monstrous versions of vampires have looked like. So it would not be too out of place on an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But everything is just in inks with lines and shading, and the only red is in his eyes and in the red of the Superman logo. It's extremely eye-catching. It's very startling, and I love it, really, actually. The art on the inside is by Kurt Swan, penciler, and the two inkers, Larry Malstedt and Tom Yates, for a story written by Marv Wolfman. Now, Marv Wolfman, in two issues' time, is going to be the regular writer of this book, or at least the book that takes this book's place, Adventures of Superman, beginning with 424, which is, of course, going to be after our coverage for this series. But he has not never written for Superman before. It's just not a whole lot of writing for Superman. He had a memorable Action Comics run that went for about a year, and that's about it. His earliest credit is a World of Krypton story where he introduced the name of Rao as an ancient sun god for Krypton years before Superman swearing by or calling on the name of Rao as just a regular matter of course ever became a thing. But yes, so Marv Wolfman is writing this. It's called Dark Moon Rising, and it opens with the caption, Phase 1. There is a man running from a mob in a business suit. He runs down into a subway station. A train passes by. He misses the train. They chase him onto the tracks of the train and down the tunnel, and they corner him at one point in the subway. And as he's up against a wall, he begins to transform. His hands turn to claws, his face grows monstrous, his teeth become fangs, color is replaced with grays, speech gives way to guttural yelps. Outside, in the park not far away, lovers cuddle under a warm and wonderful new full moon. But here, in the dark beneath Metropolis, in the grime and slime and stink of a tunnel, which runs not far from the door to hell itself, there is only fear. And these men are faced off with a werewolf with their flashlights and their guns, and he attacks them. Now the hunted becomes the hunter. He hungers and he moves in for the kill. But something stops him. No kill, no feasting this night. Escape. And so after beating them all away, he is able to run down the train tunnel. And as a train passes by, he grabs it and punches his way through the windshield and throttles the engineer of the front car. but still doesn't kill him, just attacks him and stuns him and makes his way down the length of the train inside. The driver's like, Central, I need help here. Something's on the loose. Some beast. It destroyed the brake wheels. The dead man's brake controls are gone. My God, Central, we're a runaway. And that's where Superman comes in. This isn't something the average police officer is equipped to deal with. This is a job for Superman. So he flies down the street, flies down the stairwells to the subway, crashes his way into the back of the train because Superman doesn't use doors. Take it easy, folks. I'm here. You know, side note, I don't know if you've ever watched the anime My Hero Academia. If you like superheroes, especially young superheroes, it's definitely well worth your time. I know people have a thing about anime. They either really like it or they really don't. But, you know, just treat it as a cartoon. Try it out as a cartoon and see if it turns, you know, tickles your buttons, because it's really, really pretty great. But the sort of number one hero, the symbol for peace, All Might, definitely is a bit of a riff on Superman. And whenever he shows up on a scene, he's like, no worries, I'm here. You know, the I'm here just reminded me of that here from Superman. And everyone on the train is like, oh, this is too much. It's Superman. And one of the women is like, he is gorgeous. What I would do for a night with him. Yow. You go, girl. But when Superman confronts the werewolf scratches him in the face and knocks him down. We get a little bit of perspective from the werewolf's mind. He thinks of Superman as an attacking beast rather than himself being a beast. The beast falls and he pounces a second time. Hit it. Hurt it. Kill. No. No, he cannot kill. There is no fear in this beast. No matter. He has won. Better leave before the beast brings the others to hunt him down. Better go now. And so as the train is continuing to roar down the tracks, the werewolf jumps out of a door. He uses the telephone poles or light poles that they're, zooming past to sort of like, you know, swing around and control his speed and descent. And then he lands in a parking lot below, but it's not an abandoned parking lot. And there are more people who see him and get frightened. Meanwhile, Superman is waking up inside the train. Ugh, what was the name of the meteor that hit me? But he gathers his faculties. He realizes the train is still a runaway, but he sees outside that the werewolf is facing off with a woman in the parking lot. So he jumps out, and the woman is about to get hit by a passing car, but the werewolf knocks her out of the way, which confuses Superman. That thing caught her? I don't know why, but at least now I can concentrate on the train. It's been building up speed and traveling too fast to take that turn. So as the train comes upon a turn and it jumps the track, Superman catches the train from underneath. Only seconds to act. Gently, gently. And he redirects the train of cars back onto the tracks after the curve. I don't want anyone hurt. And I guess he probably guides the train to a safe stop. But we do see him leave the train. Since I don't feel weak, it didn't have kryptonite on its claws, which leaves only one possibility. Magic. Whatever that thing was, it took blood. Looked like a werewolf, but it can't be one. Can it? And so he goes back to his fortress of solitude. He scans the blood with his microscopic vision and realizes it's definitely contaminated, but does not have time to scan and figure out exactly what it is. So he puts the blood on a slide under his supercomputers and analysis machine and decides to go away and do other stuff. Meanwhile, we get a couple of pages of the werewolf committing crimes. He robs meat from a butcher shop and eats it. He stops a car driving by and robs a bag of money from the back of it. And then we go to a group of scientists talking about Tom Lawrence. Now, he has to be found before the final night of the full moon, before he can control his transformations, because he could hurt all of them and he's got to be stopped. So these are people who know what's going on with our werewolf, and they're trying to stop him. And the only way to do that is to find him and kill him. Later that evening, we catch up with Clark Kent at the Daily Planet offices. Lois Lane is all dressed up to leave work and go out on a date with Jonathan J. Wyatt, who is a Hollywood actor. I'm not sure whom he is supposed to be a stand-in for. I don't know enough about my awesome 80s actors to know who Jonathan J. Wyatt might be a mock-up for, if he's a mock-up for anyone in particular. But Jimmy Olsen is kind of worried because he's heard that Wyatt is a bit of a wolf and does not want Lois Lane to, you know, have a bad time. But she is eager for a very energetic encounter with Wyatt. ta-ta, gentlemen. If you're lucky, I'll tell you all about it tomorrow. If I'm lucky, you'll never know the truth. Bye-bye. Clark is, meanwhile, wearing a bandage on his cheek to cover the slice from the cut he got from a werewolf, which no one comments on the fact that Clark never has cuts or bruises. I guess they just, you know, don't really think about it at this particular moment. Jimmy Olsen also heads out to try to find some girl to woo and win, and so Clark is left to turn to Superman, and he wants to go check on his supercomputer. Lois has a date with a movie star. Mine's with a supercomputer. I think she'll enjoy her night more than I will mine. And now we go to phase two. The werewolf is infiltrating a power plant. For the moment, his mind is clear. He knows what he has to do and prays he remains lucid long enough to do it. He needs electricity, needs to burn away this curse. He must end it now or remain the twisted creature forever. Meanwhile, Superman is checking out his blood results at the Fortress of Solitude. I didn't believe it before, but I can't refute the evidence. Wolf's blood has mixed with my own. And as much as I'd like to ignore the facts, that thing had to be a werewolf. So much for rational explanations. And an alarm comes in, and Police Inspector Jim Henderson is on the screen. We hardly ever see him. We've talked about him before, though. Superman, we have an emergency. Scientists from Lupus Laboratories have information about that creature you battled last night. Superman says, tell me when and where, Inspector. I'll be there. And no one ever points it out in the story, but lupus? Lupus is the Latin word for wolf. And over the space of several hundreds of years, lupus in Latin eventually became lobo in Spanish, which is also the word for wolf. So the linguistically inclined will automatically read that name and make a connection between that company and the werewolf. Meantime, there is a man walking down the street, closing up the door on his jewelry exchange. He has a briefcase full of $300,000 in precious stones. It is chained to his wrist. And as Superman approaches, he sees the werewolf attack the man and kill him and make off with that case of jewels. Now, this is the first time we have seen anyone be killed by a werewolf in this story. The werewolf jumps into a window and throws a person out the window behind him. Superman flies down and catches the man from safety, flies back into the window, returns him to his mom, who's very, very grateful. You're safe, Henry. Thank God. Thank God. No, thanks, Superman. Which, you know, is worth pointing out. If somebody does something for you, thank them directly. Maybe thank other people later. But as Superman flies past the family and down the stairs, he has lost all trace of the werewolf. But there was no time to escape. He sees a wino, or at least a drunk man in a disheveled suit, sitting on the staircase with a bottle. Mister, you see anything you can buy here? Nope, didn't see nothing. She ain't you, Superman? Yeah, you Superman. Wow. Bend me a steel bar, will you, pal? Just shows I can prove I met you. And Superman flies down to the bottom of the staircase and says, I'm a little busy now, but thanks for your help. And the man watches him leave. Superman arrives at Lupus Laboratories, and they are so happy to see him. I just had a run-in with the werewolf. What do you know about him? They fill him in that his name is Tom Lawrence. He worked alongside them researching rare blood diseases, and they did several radioactivity experiments on blood and somehow managed to radiate blood into a form that manifests lycanthropy, which is the technical term, if there is one for such a thing, for the condition of becoming a werewolf. They thought they'd probably just duplicated blood, which may have existed in the past, a blood type caused by diseases in food or water, which inspired the werewolf legends of the past. They figure that Lawrence has been crazy since his divorce. He must have stolen the serum and used it on himself and turned himself into that creature you battled. They tell Superman that he's insane, he's a killer, and if he isn't cured by tomorrow, the last day of the full moon, he'll remain a werewolf forever. Superman is very pensive, having heard all this. From what I can tell, he's already killed, yet something keeps bothering me. But the scientists are urging, you have to stop him, Superman, before he kills again. Hurry, you only have one more night. As Superman flies through the night to search for the werewolf, he's thinking, something in the back of my mind keeps nagging at me. I can remember everything I've seen, but I'm just not fitting it into place. And back at the power plant, the werewolf is still there messing with circuits, which is a little bit weird because we saw him arrive before the jewel robbery, and yet he's still there. He needs electricity to cleanse him of the curse. Here in the electrical plant, it is his to command, and he's punching a bunch of live wires. Superman hears the explosion and flies down and sees the wolf. The wolf is thinking, just a few more seconds, please stay away from me. But the only sounds he can make are deep and guttural. Thanks for making your presence known, pal, so I can take you back to Lupus Labs. Lupus, no, not there, never. And the werewolf fights back against Superman. A bunch of men with hard hats and clubs, I guess they're electric plant workers, they've seen hints of the ruckus and they come to help. They see the werewolf attacking Superman. No, get back. But they come to his aid anyway. No way, Supes, we're not going to let anyone get the best of you. And the werewolf is thinking they attack, all of them together. And he snarls, feeling the hate swell inside him. He wants to kill, but instead. And Superman notices he's not attacking them. What's he doing? And the werewolf starts hitting the support beams nearby him, pulling a Samson move. He's separating them. Good, I don't want them hurt when I... And Superman jumps up behind the werewolf, who turns around and punches him to the ground. His mind is gone now. Only the bestial savage survives to stalk his prey. The creature stares at his victim, and victory demands a trophy. So he pulls Superman's costume off of him and puts it on himself, leaving Superman bare-ass naked. I don't know if we've ever had fully naked Superman in a comic book story before. I feel like maybe we have done once. And of course, we had a naked baby Superman in Superman the movie. But this is what the cover is referring to. The cover hints at Superman being a werewolf. And this is the closest we're going to get to that. A werewolf wearing Superman's outfit. And as the werewolf leaves, Superman is getting his faculties back together. He's had a rough go this issue. He's been knocked out a few times. Well, this is one case I'm keeping to myself. Obviously, first things first, I need clothes. I wouldn't look right for Superman to be arrested for indecent exposure. So he super speed flies to a sporting goods store. He steals a tracksuit, leaves a note for the owner, and hopefully he'll understand. And back at work the next morning, he's wearing his clothes and Lois shows up. I don't believe I was actually stood up. That creep never showed. So she's really peeved at her Hollywood actor would-be date. While Clark is making phone calls trying to find a man, Lois says, aren't we all? You know, that could take a long time. I haven't any choice. And that's when Jimmy Olsen enters with a bunch of flowers. Wow, Lois, you must have made a great impression on Wyatt. Him? He never showed. Stood me up. Why would he send me roses? And 2 dozen at that. Mucho expensive. And there's a note, which Lois reads, my dear Lois, my jet was fogged in L.A. I tried calling, but circuits were busy. Please forgive me. Tonight, my lovely Rose. And all is forgiven. Lois is so excited. He was fogged in. I wasn't stood up. But Jimmy cautions, I don't know, Lois. I still hear he's a wolf. And tonight is my night to howl. Again, you go, Lois. You go get what you want. Jimmy Olsen came into the room also to give Clark some information he asked for from the city tax offices. It's Tom Lawrence's ex-wife's address to see if maybe Lawrence has tried contacting his wife and kids. Ex-wife and kids. Superman puts on a spare costume, so not his original Kryptonian stretching costume, but just, you know, Superman-looking clothes. Talking to the family, sure, Tom called yesterday, said he was in some kind of trouble. Are you after him, Superman? I'm not sure, Mrs. Lawrence. Do you have an address? He only gave me his phone number. Is that good enough? Sure, I can trace the address from there. And after giving autographs to the 2 kids, Jerry and Chuck, Superman flies off. He finds Tom Lawrence in human form back in an apartment where he's staying. He sees Superman's costume next to him. He says, I'm not exactly certain what you've done, but after you return my real uniform, let's talk. And so I guess Superman goes to the bathroom and changes clothes instead of being stripped naked in front of Tom Lawrence, even though that's already what happened. And with that communication between Superman and the werewolf, we go to Phase 3. We're at Lupus Laboratories, and they are very worried that if Lawrence isn't dead, everything we've worked for will be blown. After tonight, he'll be able to control his transformation. His mind will be clear. He'll be our equal. He can reveal everything. And Superman bursts in through the wall with a werewolf Lawrence under his arm, because Superman doesn't use doors. And he says they've already told him everything. That Tom Lawrence has already spilled the beans about his discovery, about how the other scientists stole it from him and tried to have him killed. You use the serum to give you powers, and you use your powers to commit crimes. The scientists are like, no, you're crazy. He's a murderer. But Superman contradicts them. No, the creature I saw, the one who killed those people, was right-handed. Thomas is left-handed. So we saw Superman get a werewolf who attacked and killed a jewelry man during the same time that Tom Lawrence werewolf was at the electric plant, because there were more than one werewolf, and the one that Superman had seen had a different dominant hand than Thomas Lawrence. So all the scientists wolf out, they all attack Superman and Tom werewolf. The fight goes up the stairwell toward the roof, and Tom realizes he only has one last chance to help stop things. He grabs a metal antenna off the roof. It's bolted down, but with his werewolf strength, he's able to wrench the metal bolts out of their concrete base, and he aims the base of the antenna toward the inside of the stairwell. There's a lightning storm, and when lightning strikes the tip of the antenna, it hits everybody inside. It fries Tom Lawrence and all of the scientists and Superman, but of course, Superman can take it. And the electrical power Lawrence knew was able to change them all back to human. Superman goes to Lawrence and catches him and cradles him. Did you do it, Superman? Did you stop them? No, I didn't stop them, my friend. You did. And he flies away with Tom Lawrence in his arms. Now, it's strongly implied that Tom Lawrence died because he got hit by electricity, but it's also kind of hinted that maybe he didn't die because Superman's flying him away. Maybe he got him to a hospital. We don't really know, because the Daily Planet headline, "Scientist Muzzles Werewolf Gang," doesn't really give any hints. And the last thing we see is a conversation between Clark, Jimmy, and Lois about how Lois got her date, but I'm never dating another lousy man as long as I live. Don't tell me. Why didn't show up again? Oh, he showed up, and it was all grab, grab, and grope, grope. I had to punch him out just so I could get room to breathe. I never, I repeat, never want to see another lousy wolf again. And Clark says, me neither, Lois. Me neither. And winks at the camera like it's the 1960s. Yeah, so, you know, Lois wanted, you know, some action, but, you know, as any person does, she wanted it on her own terms, and he was definitely not respecting that. So, anyways, there's also, of course, the you know, conjunction of meanings of wolf there at the end of the story, a bit of a comedy bit. For a last Superman story, which this really kind of is the last story of the ongoing Superman series before we get to whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow, this feels very inconsequential. But aside from that, I rather enjoyed it. The werewolf designs could have stood to look a little more wolfish. They really are just monstrous fang people. There's nothing, like, there's no elongation of the snout. There's really nothing that says wolf about it. Monster, yes. Wolf, no. But the story is neat. The way that Superman puts things together, I feel like, is one of those things where you were not given the clues as a reader to notice everything. Although maybe if you looked really, really carefully, you might have seen Tom using his right hand and the other guy using his left hand, or whichever way it was. But yeah, the story was nice. It was fine. It was good enough. And next issue, whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow, as revealed by Alan Moore, Kurt Swan, and George Perez, on sale June 12th. It's a date. And this will be the first time that I've ever read this story. But that does bring us to the end of the Superman comics that were published on May 8th. And as is usually the case, looking at next week, there are two comics that feature Superman to some degree, but they're not really enough to warrant an episode. We have Booster Gold 7 and Batman The Dark Knight 3. So, brief recap of what Superman does in those. In Booster Gold 7, Superman Booster Gold and the teeny tiny red armored alien named Z, who is now full-sized, and the boy who discovered him have all been brought before a blue alien warlord or king or something to answer for the crimes of treason. The red alien is going to be executed, and the superheroes are going to be executed alongside him. Booster Gold is like, no, we've got to fight this revolution. We've got to stop this evil despot, just like Z told us. But whenever they're all incarcerated, Superman is not fighting. And basically the way the story goes is he tries to teach Booster Gold that when you get involved in geopolitics, things are always more complex than you expect, which is why it's rarely a good idea to get involved in international affairs, whether on Earth or another planet. It's why he focuses on immediate threats and saving individuals rather than trying to change the world scene, which is a theme we've seen addressed before in recent issues. Turns out that the reason the 6-inch tall alien is now full size is because all of them have been shrunk down to 6 inches for this person's world. And whenever they're all brought back before the king, Superman tries to defuse the situation. You're wrong about us, Lord Gala. We mean you no harm. But if you try to harm us, the consequences will be harsh for you. But Lord Galeb says, we know that you're not at fault. You were only tricked by Ran Z. My wife will return you to your normal size and you'll quickly leave. Ran Z, though, will stay here and be executed. Booster Gold tries to fight the situation, and Superman gets in his way. So you have a fight between Superman and Booster Gold. And it's somewhat intense, especially since Booster Gold is just a dude in a suit. But Superman goes easy on him, of course, until the truth comes out. Skeets is actually able to learn what's really going on here. Z is the stepbrother of the king and has been jealous of his throne and thinks that he deserves it. He's been trying to lead an insurrection against the rightful, benevolent rule of this planet for years, and Booster has been suckered. So once Booster hears this, he's like, oh, I'm sorry. He and Superman and Skeets are taken back to Earth and enlarged, and Superman leaves the story with a very bad taste in his mouth for Booster Gold. Lois Lane shows up as they're returning to interview Booster because he's the hot new thing in Metropolis. Face it, Superman, you have some real competition now. No offense, but to John Q. Public, you're yesterday's news. It's just that the fickle public wants something new every week. And so Superman leaves, and Booster Gold continues on with his storyline. Actually, there is one more beat, and that is that Superman talks to Skeets. Since Skeets and Booster are both from the future, and Skeets is a computer, he says, so tell me, is Booster supposed to be here? And Skeets says, yeah, my history records show a Booster Gold who operated in Metropolis. I know very little, though, due to the great time void that begins in 1986. So the idea of a time void and that the future doesn't really know how things go in this present day is one of those things that's sort of a trope of Legion of Superheroes stories, because you're in the future, but you don't know how the present is going to work itself out, at least not in detail. So not only are you unwilling to give information to the past, you're also unable to give information to the past. So this time void starts in 1986, which is around the time that the whole pre-crisis, post-crisis transfer takes place. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. I did continue to monitor this story to see if there were any elements that would cause this to not work in a post-crisis situation. Since Booster Gold is primarily a post-crisis hero, and since it's pretty easy to take this entire series and put it in the post-crisis continuity and no pre-crisis whatsoever, it's important to see if Superman's world fits that. And sure enough, there are zero references to WGBS, to Lana Lang as his girlfriend, to any of that. And so, yes, this, although it is told in the pre-crisis era, and so we're covering here as our pre-crisis comics, because people reading this story wouldn't know anything about what a post-crisis was yet, at least not in the sense that we do, it does fit very nicely into the post-crisis continuity rules as well. So that's Booster Gold 7. The other story that came out next week that we're going to talk about briefly is Batman The Dark Knight number 3. Again, this series was not titled Batman The Dark Knight Returns when it came out. That was only the title of the first issue. The third issue is entitled Batman Hunt the Dark Knight, And Superman's role here, we were told last issue, Ronald Reagan, the president, asked Superman to go and have a conversation with Batman, try to rein him in. So we get to a beat where Clark and Bruce are in their civvies and they're just talking. Bruce is, of course, looking older because he's gray and grizzled in this, but Clark still looks like Clark. He's, you know, tall, strapping, full head of black hair, and he's trying to talk Bruce down, and Bruce is not having any of it. He doesn't really argue back. He's just not going to entertain the notion. And Clark says, these aren't the old days, Bruce. World's got no room for... It's like this, Bruce. Sooner or later, somebody's going to order me to bring you in. Somebody with authority. And when that happens, Clark, may the best man win. Now that's just, hold on a second. But with his super ear hearing, Clark hears Ronald Reagan talking on the news about heroic American troops now engaged in direct combat with Soviet forces. And he excuses himself to go fight. Because basically, what we have in this dystopian future is a world where superheroes have been outlawed. And actually, as we see Superman doing several scenes I'm going to talk about in just a minute, we get some narration about how that happened. The rest of us learn to cope. The rest of us recognize the danger of the endless envy of those not blessed. Diana went back to her people. Hal went to the stars. And I have walked the razor's edge for so long. But you, Bruce, you with your wild obsession. So people who did not have superpowers, in other words, the hordes of massing public people, basically rose up against the idea of superheroes and says, we don't want you anymore. And so all the superheroes faded away. They'll kill us if they can, Bruce. Every year they grow smaller. Every year they hate us more. We must not remind them that giants walk the earth. You were the one they used against us, Bruce. You were the one who played it rough. When the noise started from the parents' groups and the subcommittee called us in for questioning, you were the one who laughed. That sorry laugh of yours. Sure, we're criminals, you said. We've always been criminals. We have to be criminals. Now, this is interesting in the light of one element of early Superman history. Of course, if you were to ask anyone, any comic fan today, who is the more violent, Batman or Superman? Who is the darker in the way he approaches criminals, Batman or Superman? Who is the more moralistic and the more upright and the more law-abiding, Batman or Superman? Those answers would be clear. However, it's interesting that early in comics, the situation was reversed. Superman was the rough and ready justice superhero. Batman was the law-abiding, do what it takes, but only what it takes, and set a good example for Robin because he's a child I have along with me, and we'll laugh at the bad guys as we beat them, but we're not going to do anything crazy. Sure, there are a couple of instances where Batman crosses some lines in the very early comics, but they were very few and they went away very quickly. Whereas Superman was killing people in his comics on the regular for his first entire couple of years. The writers of Superman were told to bring him more in line with children's stories, expectations, and to be more like Batman. Make Superman more nice like Batman. And of course, you know, the pendulum swung the other way after some decades and we are where we are. And in fact, this story itself helps to feed the idea of the borderline criminal type of, you know, activity that Batman does. During all of this narration from Clark as Superman, he is out basically fighting America's wars. He's punching planes out of the sky. He's blowing up tanks. He's blowing up battleships. He is killing people in the war that America is fighting. So, and it's just kind of glossed over. This is something he's doing in every panel, and it's just not even mentioned. But Superman is fighting America's wars and killing the enemy soldiers and combatants and doing it in a way that no one knows he's active. We almost threw a party when you retired. By then, the FBI was in it, and things were getting out of hand, and there was the trouble with Oliver. We don't know what the trouble with Oliver was. Do you remember why you retired, Bruce? No. Just look at you. You would do it again, and like a murderer, you'd cover it up again. Nothing matters to you except your holy war. They were considering their options, and you are probably still laughing when we came to terms. I gave them my obedience and my invisibility. They gave me a license and let us live. So Superman swore himself to obey the orders of the United States government. That's the implication of these narrations. I've heard him called a lackey to the warmongering of Ronald Reagan and the Republican Party, which, you know, for this particular story, does not seem that far off the beat. No, I don't like it, but I get to save lives and the media stays quiet. But now the storm is growing again. They'll hunt us down again because of you. And he's doing it all in a way that nobody realizes he was there. Nobody knows that Superman is out fighting their wars. Even on the news broadcast here, Ronald Reagan is super sneaky about it. And by the way, we've got God on our side, or the next best thing, winks at the camera. So yeah, that's Superman in Batman The Dark Knight 3. He tells us a bit of the backstory that links the present day to this possible dystopian future. And next month we will have Batman The Dark Knight Falls. So no new episode next week, because those were the two comics that were that had Superman in them. Not enough for an episode. But the following week, May 22nd, we're going to have a little bit of a full episode, because we have three comics to talk about. Action Comics 582, Superman Annual 12, and the one-shot special Heroes Against Hunger. So those are all coming out on May 22nd. And since this is a 5-week month, we actually will also be having some coverage on May 29th with a special issue that I don't know if I've even mentioned is coming in this podcast so far. But yes, so Action Comics, the Annual 12, and Heroes Against Hunger next week on May 22nd. So do be here for that. And until then, thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of JohnReadsComics.com, home of virtually all of the podcasts produced by me, John Wilson. Each show has its own feed on your favorite podcatcher, or the whole group can be followed under the name John Reads Comics. Remember, there is no H in John. Feedback for all shows can be sent to johnreadscomics@gmail.com, and I will plan to read it on a future episode unless you ask me not to. Follow me on Twitter @johnreadscomics, and thank you always for listening to podcasts from johnreadscomics.com.